Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. If you followed the recent legislative session, you learned that we passed an austerity budget with no new money. You might therefore be surprised that more than $300 million in new infrastructure spending also passed. Our guest today, Fred Nathan, the founder of Think New Mexico, believes that infrastructure appropriations deserve much greater scrutiny and don't yield enough bang for the buck. Fred Nathan, welcome to the program. It's great to finally get you here.
Stephen, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Fred, through the years, Think New Mexico has pushed all sorts of reform legislation, from eliminating the food tax to preserving the lottery scholarship. And so I'm sort of wondering how you came to focus on infrastructure spending now. I mean, it's been a long-term problem.
Well, we look for things, Stephen, that are big enough to make a difference, yet small enough to be politically achievable. And so this was sort of an obvious candidate for us. It's something we've been looking at for a long time. And we thought after last year's special session, which was designed just to pass this bill, and there was a lot of dysfunction around getting it passed, that this might be the right time to try to fix it.
What in general, just overall, are the problems that you see with infrastructure spending?
Well, I guess I would point out what other critics have said, and that is, for example, Governing Magazine has pointed out we're the only state of the 50 states that uses a political formula to spend dollars on these public works projects. Other states have a plan, priorities, and objective criteria, which seems like a much better way to do this. And even, you know, Governing Magazine is a, you know, outside of New Mexico, but even some legislators now are acknowledging this. For example, Senator Pete Campos from Las Vegas wrote his PhD thesis about this process and said, you know, it's largely, it's too political, it's parochial, and it's archaic. And we agree.
All right. So later in the show, I want to come back and address some of the specific problems that I've heard you talk about in the past. But I think, you know, one of the most fascinating things to me about the infrastructure spending is the history and background behind it. And I wonder if you could go into that at least a bit for us.
Sure. So the turning point was really 2 days before the end of the 1977 legislative session.
So that's almost 40 years ago.
Four decades ago.
Yeah, right.
And back then, before then, actually, when there was something needed in the state like a new penitentiary or the state capitol building itself, there would be a single bill with a way to pay for it, and it would be vetted through all the committees and either pass or fail. But with 2 days left in the 1977 session, the Finance Committee pulled in 27 different bills that were floating around that session that had to do with public works or public infrastructure and rolled them up into one massive single bill. And they called it the Christmas Tree Bill. And just so that no legislator missed the point, we went back and actually got the bill. And on the front page, they formatted the words and the letters in the shape of a tree, so that everybody knew this was the Christmas tree bill, as in everybody's going to get a gift for their district if this bill passes. And not surprisingly, it passed unanimously. And it's interesting, we went back and looked at the archives of the newspaper articles that were
written. When you say everybody's going to get a gift, you mean the legislators are going to get a
gift to bring back to their district some sort of project. And we were looking at the archives of the news conference after the bill passed, and it was interesting. Aubrey Dunn Sr., his son is now the state land commissioner, was the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee and technically the sponsor of this bill, and he was already sort of expressing reservations about this process. And, you know, there have been problems. They've passed a Christmas tree bill ever since then. Every year it's become something of a tradition. And it's created a lot of problems for the state.
Now, a really fascinating thing to me is you mentioned right at the top that there's a sort of political formula whereby the infrastructure is divided up. And it's really, to me, kind of bizarre. It's the governor gets a third.
Correct.
Of the infrastructure. The Senate, and divided up among senators, gets a third. and the House gets a third.
Correct.
And then and in terms of the legislators, they each divide it up equally. So the a senator gets, like this year, about $1 million for his district, mm-hmm. and a House member gets about $600,000.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what happened.
So I, as you said that no one else uses a political formula, but does anyone else do anything like this?
Not that we're aware of, and others have also looked at it. Sandra Fish, who's just a wonderful journalist for New Mexico In Depth, came to the same conclusion that we did, that no other state does anything resembling this. And, you know, and of all the states, we're the wrong state to do this, because the problem with a political formula like that is it assumes that the needs are spread evenly across the state. But if you just take, for example, Los Alamos, that doesn't really have very much in the way of infrastructure needs, and Mora, you know, the legislators from Los Alamos really don't need anything for their district, whereas Mora could use a lot more than $1 million for their water systems and roads and so on and so forth. So it's really a dysfunctional system in terms of meeting the needs of the constituents.
So has this – was this one-third, one-third, one-third formula, did this start with the Christmas tree bill, or did it evolve?
It evolved, but pretty quickly it evolved into that one-third, one-third, one-third. Governor Richardson, when he came in – no governor likes this system – and he tried to make it, I believe, one half and then one quarter for the House and one quarter for the Senate.
That, yeah.
And his point was, you know, the executive is a co-equal branch of government to the legislature. But, you know, even that wouldn't have made that much sense. But he was trying to get more money for statewide needs, which I think every governor agrees is necessary here.
So, but there have been special sessions, like last year, there was a special session. So what is it they fight about if they agree on this formula?
That's a great question. So we went back over the last two decades and we counted six special sessions, so a half dozen special sessions in the last
devoted to infrastructure.
Just to this bill. And The problem is when, Stephen, when you don't have a plan or priorities or any objective criteria, it really comes down to a test of wills. And sometimes it breaks down in two ways. Sometimes it falls apart on Democratic-Republican lines, and sometimes it falls apart on executive-legislative lines with, you know, the legislative wanting more, the executive wanting more. And this is just one more way in which the system is broken.
All right. So one of the most bizarre things, to even more bizarre than this, is the actual way it's done by the individual legislators. Because in preparation for the show, I looked at some different legislators. Like I live in the North Valley, So I looked at Senator John Ryan. I'm not picking out John Ryan in particular because he seems to do this the way every other senator and every other representative doesn't. But, I mean, he must have $100 million in requests that he – in his initial requests. And all of the representatives and all the senators seem to have far more requests than they could ever fund because they only have $1 million or $600,000.
Correct.
So how do those requests come about?
Well, they come from all over. They come from state agencies, cities, counties, not-for-profits, and just individuals, constituents. And you're right. It's many more times what they get as their allocation. And one thing to point out here is that towards the end of the session, maybe with about a week to go, the governor and the legislature settle on an overall number based on bonding capacity. And then they tell each legislator, this is how much you're going to get. So every senator, as you pointed out, gets about $1 million this past session. Every representative got a little less than $600,000. And then it's up to them and their sole discretion how they want to allocate that money. But you can imagine when they're getting hit up from every direction, there's going to be a tendency to try to spread it around, and the money gets cut up very thinly. And in many cases, one of the big problems, and I hope we will go into the problems, is that there's a tendency to underfund so that you can try to hit every political constituency. And then money ends up inevitably, because there's insufficient funding, sitting idle on the sidelines. And we can talk more about that.
Yeah, I want to come back to that in a second. But first, we have to take a short break. We're back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have on the show today Fred Nathan. Fred is the founder of Think New Mexico. Think New Mexico is a reform think tank, and they have focused this past year on the way our legislature decides to fund infrastructure spending. So we were talking right before the break about how divided up this money ultimately gets. So and if you only have $1 million to spend, say you're a senator, and you've got, say, 100, or I noticed one senator had $150 million worth of requests. And presumably there are people behind every one of these requests. So he ends up, or typically it ends up being a very small request to all kinds of different projects.
Yeah, and I was just
Do you have numbers on, like, how many different projects, for example?
Well, it's come down dramatically. In 2006, I think there were 8,000 projects.
8,000 projects.
Correct. Now it's more like 1,500. But when you compare it to other states, we're—
1,500 between the two houses, the Senate and the House.
Correct.
That's still a lot of projects.
It's an enormous amount of projects. We were looking at Oklahoma, similar and in many ways, and they have like 300 projects because they're spending it on bigger infrastructure type things, whereas some of these appropriations for projects are as small as $3,000, and they're for things like band uniforms or football helmets or silverware, police cars, sculpture gardens. And in many cases, these are not really infrastructure projects. They're things that should be spent with general operating money. And many of these things will wear out before the bonds get paid off over about 10 years. And then the final thing that's really tragic is that they don't create jobs the way infrastructure, you know, public works projects, water systems, roads, bridges, dams do.
In a state that desperately needs jobs and desperately needs infrastructure. So you get sort of like a multiplier effect of, say for every dollar you spend, you get another dollar of GDP in New Mexico. Here we're not getting that because we're not spending it on public works. We're spending it on, you know, band uniforms, out-of-state band uniforms.
Right, that are manufactured somewhere else in a state that's number one in unemployment and number 50th in job growth, which makes it especially tragic.
But one of the things that really bothered me about this was that there's no vetting of what it is the senator or the representative should actually fund. And so there's no comparison of, you know, should I fund Project A? Or, you know, maybe there's 100 projects, or should I fund some other project? So there's no comparison. And meanwhile, so you're spending $1 million. Each senator is allocating $1 million. You know, in the normal legislative process, I mean, just $1 million increase in any department, you know, it might go through three hearings in the Senate and three hearings in the House. Here, each senator is spending like $1 million, and there's no hearings, and there's no way to compare anything.
That's exactly right. I mean, you've hit on two of the biggest problems, Stephen. One is that we're not getting the money to where it's needed most, and so we're not comparing road projects to other road projects. There's, again, no prioritization, no objective criteria. So that's a problem. And then the second problem is something you alluded to, which is the total lack of transparency and public scrutiny. So the bill, you know, it starts with the governor's office and they put in what their wish list is. And then the bill towards the very end of the session gets substituted as the legislators pour in their projects. So, you know, to use the example that we've been using, the House gets $600,000 for each member, the Senate $1 million. So they substitute that in. But that happens sort of behind closed doors. There's no opportunity.
Now, I actually tried to find it, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
That's right. And Sandra Fish and Trip Jennings at New Mexico In Depth, bless their collective hearts, have been trying to get the legislators to voluntarily disclose which projects are
theirs. Why do they have to voluntarily disclose it when it's supposedly going into a bill, and bills are public? I honestly don't understand that.
I don't either. And it's a hard thing to defend. And it should be public. There should be public hearings. And every legislator ought to own up, I mean, if they feel good about these projects, as to, you know, what they're sponsoring, so the public can evaluate it.
Couldn't even find out, Fred, after the bill passed, what legislator had passed what. I mean, it's sort of hard to understand how in a public bill you can't find out who was behind what.
You're absolutely right. And when you look at this more as a political scientist, you think about, well, who's winning from this system and who's losing? You know, the obvious loser here is the public, because they have no idea. This is their money, as you point out. And as you also point out, they have a right to know how it's being spent. The people that I think benefit even more than the legislators themselves are the lobbyists, because one of the things that goes on is these lobbyists get hired by clients to get money from this system. And it couldn't be better for them. All they have to do is identify a single legislator who's a friend, and they go to that legislator and say, you know, Senator X, you've got $1 million. Could you give my client $100,000 of that for whatever, a flamenco dance studio? Actually, a real live example. A doggy drinking fountain. There was one of those down in Las Cruces. And what gets pushed out are the public needs. Like, there are tens of thousands of people in this state that don't have access to clean drinking water, but somebody with a well-connected lobbyist got a doggy drinking fountain funded in Las Cruces 4 years ago.
All right. So you're bringing up the problems. I want to talk to you specifically about the problems that result from – and we've certainly made it clear that there's no transparency. But the thing that we've heard the most about when it comes to infrastructure spending, it seems to me, is that a lot of the money doesn't even get spent. I mean, the state auditor, I think, said that over the last, say, I don't know, 7 to 10 years, there's $1 billion just sitting there unspent. So that's been appropriate. We've actually got a bond. We're paying interest on the bond, and there's $1 billion sitting there, and it's just sitting there?
That's exactly right. When you bond, it's actually a little bit worse than that, because as you point out, this money is being paid for, is essentially borrowed. And because it's bonds, we can't – if the money's sitting idle, the state of New Mexico, because of some federal arbitrage laws, can't put that in a bank. So it's – in effect, like we borrowed $1.2 billion at 3% and then put it under our collective mattress where it's earning no interest. And in too many cases, these projects, because there's been no planning on the front end, you know, there's not an architectural plan or an engineering study, the money can't be spent the way the legislature is hoping it's going to be spent. So you're right. There's about $1.2 billion going back about 6 years that is just sitting, earning no interest and not creating any jobs. And we have so many infrastructure needs in the state, probably closer to $4 billion. So it's tragic on many different levels.
So the other thing about it is even if it had been vetted, say – you had an architect look at it, or you had an engineer look at it. But say you're a senator and you've only got $1 million to spend, mm-hmm. and you want to spend it on different projects, you have to partially fund whatever the project is, and what? Hope that it'll continue to get funding, or hope you'll how do you fund a big project?
Well, you put your finger on another really important problem here, which is this what Senator John Arthur Smith calls the layaway funding concept, where you know a senator or representative has a very good intention. They want to build a dam or a courthouse. But you're right, with $1 million, they can't do that. So they try to fund it over multiple years. And the problem with that is many times, you know, what began as a project for $5 million, by the time they've put away $5 million over 5 years, it's now a $7 million project. And again, the money sits idle.
We're going to have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have Fred Nathan of Think New Mexico as my guest today. We're talking about infrastructure spending. You might think this is boring, but actually it's kind of fascinating, the completely bizarre and irrational way that our state currently spends money. And you've mentioned a couple things about projects that that were not needed. The doggy drinking fountain. You also mm-hmm. mentioned the Flamenco Studio is probably a classic example of a project that wasn't needed, that got funded big time.
Right. Several legislators came together on that. That was actually here in Albuquerque and funded that. And they wanted a specific building to be bought with the money that they had appropriated. And it turned out that the building was uninhabitable. It was bought by the state, and then the city of Albuquerque determined that the building was structurally unsound. And then the city had to spend its own taxpayer dollars, about $50,000, to tear down this building, and the Flamenco Studio never got up and running.
So they spent $500,000 about on this Flamenco Studio, and all they did was tear it down and spend another $50,000. You know, and one of the big things that seems to me that's not talked about is the actual need for infrastructure in New Mexico, because we're doing it in this bizarre way. We've got all this infrastructure that we do need that's not getting funded. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Anybody who's driven on our state roads knows that we've got an enormous backlog there, I would think in excess of $1 billion. And there are engineering groups that go around and assess this, and our grades for our infrastructure, this is done by a national engineering organization, ranges between a D and an F, starting with our roads. Our water systems, there's probably another at least $1 billion of backlog.
Yeah, I cheated and looked at what the LFC had to say, and they said billions with a B. And they mentioned exactly that for water projects, $1 billion.
So those are probably the two biggest areas, water systems and roads. And, of course, those are also things that help us to attract businesses here, grow the businesses that are already here. And without infrastructure, you know, that's really important in terms of being economically viable and competitive.
So when I talk to legislators about why they wouldn't go along with a reform such as this, the biggest thing – first of all, they're hesitant to mention it, but, you know, the number one thing of any elected official is to get reelected. And you're sort of swimming upstream against that, right?
Yeah, and man, we should probably also talk about solutions before we get into the politics. But in terms of that, we did hear that a lot, where they would privately say, you know, I know the system is sort of indefensible, but it's really important to my reelection. And we did a report.
Is that true? Does it really help people get reelected?
I'm skeptical, and I've heard legislators on both sides of this. Some really don't think that there's any validity to that, and say, I doubt that most of my constituents could name a single project that I've funded. And in fact, there was a legislator from Albuquerque who since passed away, George Buffett, who got reelected a dozen times in the Northeast Heights, and he never took a penny for the system because he just was violently opposed to doing it this way. And he generally didn't have an opponent, and he never struggled to get reelected. So, I mean, that's anecdotal. But when you do the math on this, it's about for every one project you get as a legislator that you get funded, at least partially, there's eight others that don't get funded. And I've never run for office, but I would assume that it would
– The other seven people.
Yeah, are going to not like you. The people that don't get their projects funded are going to be disappointed. And I think that's one of the reasons that we haven't been able to be successful in making the system more transparent, is that I think there is some of this going on where they say, you know, I put it in, I don't know what happened to your project. And as this becomes more transparent, I think we're going to get more and more support for reforming the system.
I mean, people, in other words, voters don't know that it's the legislator himself or herself that actually nixed the project.
That's exactly right. And that they get this money to spend in their sole discretion, so that when a project doesn't get funded, that means that there wasn't legislative support. And it wasn't that some amorphous group somewhere nixed it.
So you're right. I think we need to at least talk a bit about possible solutions. And it seems to me, I mean, the way I look at it, I mean, you can have an executive agency do this. In other words, it could be part of the executive branch of the government. You could have an independent agency do it that are appointed in various ways, or think New Mexico kind of proposed a commission.
But every way
that the dig against it is, well, you know, local rural legislators will not be able to fund their projects, and therefore, what's going to happen is the big counties, the big cities. You know, if Albuquerque has a need and it's going to benefit, say, three times as many people as some rural county, even if the need in the rural county is more, well, Albuquerque's going to get the project because that's just how rational thinking goes, and therefore the rural counties will lose out even more than they currently do.
Well, let me respond to that first, and then I want to come back to what our solution is.
Yes.
But that was an argument that was made that the rural communities would be at a disadvantage, but it's actually just the opposite. In a merit-based system like what we're proposing, the money's going to flow to where it's most needed. It's most needed in some of these smaller rural districts, and so they would come out ahead under a merit-based system.
Well, I'm afraid to say we're out of time, Fred. I would like to thank you so much for coming into the studio to speak with me. That's Fred Nathan, the founder of Think New Mexico. I would also like to thank my producer, Jefferson White. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Chebecki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of this show are available on iTunes. Search Stephen Spitz. Archives of my past shows are available at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.